Lou, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Court. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal and have Mr. Wolf handle that, please.
Certainly, you may.
It may please the court to John Ballou and Adam Little appearing this morning on behalf of Brian Osipkowski, who is the appellant in this case. As I'm sure you're all aware, this appeal comes before you from Seward County District Court. This is a divorce case, 31-month marriage. Mr. Osipkowski, a 30-year-old grain producer in Columbus area. His wife, Dori Osipkowski, is a plant entomologist who is employed at, Syngenta. She earned her master's degree during this short-term marriage. The case involves really three areas that we would ask this court to take a long look at. As you can see from the judge's decision, he awarded a money judgment to Mrs. Osipkowski in this brief marriage of $680,000, basically for 2 years of crop income. Of course, was a period of time when crop prices went from $3 or $4 to $7 a bushel on corn. But the concerning thing not only is the amount of the judgment and the fact that it's not warranted by the evidence, the other thing is that the court decided that Mr. Osipkowski had to pay $680,000 right now. It gave him no time whatsoever to come up with that much money. There are three areas here that I think the court should look at. And the first one is the numbers that the court used to reach this result. Whether it's math errors or whether it's the numbers not supported by the evidence, there's a significant amount of problems with what the court eventually came up with.
Well, isn't that based upon whether this property that was used for the numbers was marital or non-marital property? I mean, if it was marital property, all the numbers in there would be correct.
Well, not quite that easy. For instance, there's an $80,000 down payment on a 340-acre tract called the Roberts property that they bought in 2012, I believe. And in the evidence, there are two checks totaling $80,000, and they were written in August. So they couldn't have been from 2012 grain. They had to be from 2011. Keep in mind that the parties were married in September of 2011, and 2 days later, harvest started. So we take the position that 2011 is off the table, even though Mrs. Osipkowski has asked for that grain to be considered. But my point is, in addressing your question, $80,000 clearly was in the record as being paid toward the purchase of that ground, and the judge did not recognize that at all. He just simply ignored it. Another math error, if we go down that path, is there was a tractor that he traded in on a new tractor. And the court got that right and valued the tractor appropriately, but then turned around and gave him a $78,500 prepaid expense credit. So what he did on one hand, he undid on the other. So what I'm saying is, just those two examples, before we even get to the $180,000 he had in the bank when they got married, that was ignored. But
I beg your pardon. That comment goes to the date of valuations?
It does.
Which is amongst your assignments of error?
It is.
Okay.
It is. It is what Mr. Emerson and I think, agreed that we would value the marital estate at or near the date of separation, which is in May of 2014. The problem with that, as you're all aware, is grain keeps changing values. And we believe the evidence clearly showed in this case that the grain that he had on hand on the date of separation was worth $444,000. That's based on Mr. Hirschberger's analysis. The court instead of using that number, used a number of about $530,000, which is what we listed on our joint property statement.
Were there some credibility determinations made by the courts?
There were no credibility determinations made in the court's findings. There was certainly...
Are they implicit?
Beg your pardon?
Are those determinations implicit?
I suspect that there are some credibility issues that are implicit, but let me point this out. Even if Mr. Ossentoski is not to be believed, and even if Mr. Hershberger's detailed analysis based on QuickBooks, crop reports, and tax returns...
But don't all those information that Mr. Hershberger received, weren't they from Mr. Ossentoski or his mother?
Some of them were, but...
Were they all?
No, because, well, the crop reports and the tax returns lined up exactly with the deposits.
Didn't those numbers change dramatically from the first review by Mr. Hershberger to the second review by Mr. Hershberger?
They did change.
And was it because of the information provided by Mr. Ossentoski's mother?
The reason they changed, and they changed in Mrs. Ossentoski's favor, it went from $69,000 of crop on hand to $444,000. And the reason they changed is because Mr. Hershberger asked Mrs. Ossentoski to tie the deposits to the grain produced when she had not done that up to that point. And that's why we ended up with the, that's why it changed so dramatically. But she and Mr. Hershberger went through each one of those deposits in the QuickBooks that's shown on our Exhibit 37 and lined those out. So that's why it changed. Now, even if you don't believe Mr. Hershberger, and even if you don't believe Mr. Ossentoski, and even if you think that everybody here is not telling the truth, the fact is that his own banker testified that when he started the marriage, including the 2011 grain year, he had about $1 million worth of property. And when
I'm
we
sorry,
were in court,
prior to the marriage, is that
well,
what you're saying?
What I'm saying
on the
is,
eve of the on the eve of the marriage.
Beg your pardon.
Were you giving us a valuation on the eve of the marriage?
Not on the eve of the marriage, but in the spring following the harvest of the 2011 crop that was being harvested.
I beg your pardon. Thank you.
If you add that in, then his balance sheet in 2012, in March, showed that he was worth $950,000. And the court completely ignored that. And Mr. Steffensmeyer, who's his banker, who had no problem with any credibility issues with the Ossentoski family, said that his net worth during this 31-month marriage had increased about $600,000, and most of it was due to the incredible increase in grain prices. So, I guess...
What did the judge do? It appears in the order that he assigned the 2011 and prior year's crop as premarital.
No, I don't think he gave him credit for any premarital.
Doesn't his order say that?
His order says that he's finding that he can't trace any grain.
First he says it's premarital, then he says it's commingled, and then
yes.
Doesn't give any value. So
I
he does
right.
Declare it's premarital.
I think it is premarital.
But then
I
he says it's commingled because the proceeds of those crops were put into joint accounts used for marital expenses. Is that what he says?
I think that's what he says, but keep in mind, this is a 30-month marriage. This isn't 20 years.
Right.
We did trace it, I think.
What did the wife bring into the marriage as far as her premarital assets?
Take an automobile, maybe.
And what did she contribute to the marriage during that time? Did she have a job? They pooled their income?
The wife,
from the...
Mrs. Ossentoski, was a full-time student commuting between Columbus and Lincoln. I think they probably lived together only 15 months. And she was working full-time during the summer months when she was living on the farm. She was not involved in the farming operation at all.
So she really didn't contribute a whole lot to the marriage?
No.
And so back to my point is, what do you establish is the marital property that's subject to division by the court? If he has $1 million before he's married, that should not be considered in the determination of the division of the assets, should it?
No, it shouldn't. I think at most, the marital estate at most is $600,000. And so even if you gave...
On the basis that crops on hand prior to the marriage are premarital.
Correct.
But the gains due to price in grain
would be included but those are passive.
Would be included.
Yes. But at most.
But that's an increase in value that neither party has any control over. So it doesn't, it's not based on the efforts of either or one of the parties. It's kind of like a certificate of deposit that has a guaranteed rate of income.
That's exactly what I would agree. I would totally agree with
that. That income isn't marital property, so the increase in the grain prices, you're arguing, is not marital property.
That's exactly right. But my argument really is, does this seem fair for a 31-month marriage to order a 30-year-old farmer to pay $680,000? I don't think so.
Mr. Ballew, you raised in your brief the contention that crop, growing crop or stored crop should be treated as similar to what we've done with cattle.
Yes.
Do you want to touch on that for a moment?
Well, I assumed that we would talk about that a little bit. And the court said grain is different than cattle in that farmers do not plant their own grain to raise crops. And then went on to say crop inventory, which includes corn and beans, is different in character from a cow herd. Well, maybe it's a little different, but I don't think it's a lot different. If this is a fungible commodity that is raised and sold based upon market timing, and the proceeds are then reinvested in the next year's crop, just like the cattle proceeds are as well, I think that's a distinction without a difference.
Because in the Schaefer Sellers universe, you don't have to identify the exact animal.
Exactly. And this court, when you decided the Sellers case and you affirmed the Schaefer cattle tracing case, said, in the present case, the Sellers marriage lasted less than 4 years as it compared to 13 years in Schaefer, and it was even more reasonable to treat the cattle herd as being his separate property without requiring him to trace each cow. I think this is exactly on point. Now, Mr. Ossentoski started this marriage with a lot of water in the pipeline. And just as in Schaefer, when you said you don't have to trace every single cow, I don't know why you would treat grain farmers differently than you would cattle producers. I mean, I know it's a little different, but cattle producers can breed the animals. Corn producer can't plant their own seeds because of patents with seed companies. You've got to start again. But this is essentially what you're asking is to treat the farming operation as a unit, just as you do the cattle herd. And I think it makes sense.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Emerson, good morning to you.
My name is Stan Emerson. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, and I think the issue before the court is whether or not the trial court abused its discretion in dividing the marital estate. The trial court went through the three-step process. It determined what was marital, what was non-marital, awarded to him what was non-marital that could be traced, and then valued the marital estate and divided. And the value was approximately $1.4 million. $20,000 of which Dory received in property, $1.38 million which Brian received in property, and that was marital estate property. He argues that he should be given credit for all of the cash that he brought into the marriage and all of the grain that he had at the time of the marriage. The problem with that is that is threefold. First of all, he commingled all of it with marital cash. He commingled it with marital grain. The court found that all of the premarital grain was liquidated during the marriage. The cash in the bank accounts, at one time $182,000, I think, at the date of marriage or thereabouts, had gone down to negative values where the line of credit was invoked to cover checks and to cover payments. And there were times when it was worth several hundred thousand dollars. But there was never any attempt at tracing of that property.
Is that on the assumption? Well, let me just ask you, do you think Schaefer's Seller line of cases should be extended to grain?
Well, with respect to the grain, the premarital grain, are you going into the Rozak case as well and that line of cases?
Let's take it all in because I think that is one of the issues implied.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think the Rozak case decided the issue that's before this court previously. I mean, it was clear that...
But that was farm equipment?
Well, it was farm equipment. It was grain. There was some grain as well in the Rozak case that was cash. And for the most part, in Rozak, none of that could be traced, which is the same here. Now, the farm equipment was traced to some extent, and he was given credit for that. That's not an issue here. But with respect to the grain, there was never an attempt to trace that. There was never an attempt to identify it. It was all commingled. The distinction holds. There is a difference between a cattle herd and between equipment or in between grain, as the court said.
Opposing counsel has mentioned that the grain is liquidated and having to do with all the patents and whatnot of the agricultural corporations, that it is different than a cattle herd propagating.
I'm not certain about
that. I think that's what he was suggesting.
I know that's what he said. I don't recall there being any evidence of that that was ever submitted in this case. But we do know that Mr. Ozentowski would receive grain in the course of harvest. He would choose to sell some immediately. He would choose to hold it for up to 3 years, apparently. And that was dependent upon grain prices. That was dependent upon what he thought was a good idea or a bad idea. But that was his own choice of what to do with the grain and how to continue with that.
Opposing counsel says there was tracing of the premarital assets, the grain being liquidated, the cash on hand at the time of the marriage. Was there evidence in the record of tracing?
Not that kept it separate from the marital estate or the marital grain and the marital cash, that sort of thing. Everything was commingled throughout the midst of that. His position also completely ignores the fact that, yes, the harvest took place immediately following the marriage. Within 3 months after the marriage, over $260,000 of that cash and of that grain was used to pay premarital expenses associated with that crop year. In addition, during the course of the marriage, the long-term marital debt that he brought in of $498,000 had been reduced to $48,000. For those reasons, we don't think that those things are items that he should be given any credit for.
Counsel,
yes.
Opposing counsel stated initially that one of the things he objected to was the district court not giving any time to pay the judgment. Do you agree that there's no time to pay the judgment?
I agree. The court just ordered $680,000.
Okay. Do you think that's reasonable?
Well, I think it's reasonable based upon all of the assets they received. They received $1.38 million worth of net equity in assets. That included cash. That included grain. He got all of the grain. I think it is reasonable that he pay that amount based upon the assets that he received. If this court in its de novo review determines that it's not reasonable, you can certainly modify that. But we think it's within the realm of what's reasonable. I don't think it's discretion by any means.
What was the basis for finding that Brian's marital assets were $2.5 million? That doesn't give him any credit for any premarital property at all, does it?
Oh, it steps out in the decree. It steps out the premarital property that he was awarded that he could identify as being premarital property.
And how much was that?
I don't know that I have a total amount on that. There was a few paragraphs that the court addressed that, both in its findings and in its order, however.
Well, it's not disputed that the wife brought into the marriage about $18,000?
Something in that neighborhood.
And had a part-time job during the summer?
Yeah, it was full-time during the summer months that she worked. It was part-time at other times.
Well, how much did she make in the 3 months that she...
I believe there were tax returns offered, Your Honor. I don't have that information.
Okay, well,
but it was a relatively small amount.
Reasonable that after a marriage of less than 4 years that the spouse should receive almost $700,000 in distribution of the property?
Well, I think when we look at the what amount he received, I mean, he
didn't he have quite a bit of money coming into the marriage? He had
money that was completely liquidated at some time.
Well, how much grain did he have at the time of the marriage?
How much money?
What was the value of his grain at the time of the marriage?
I think at the time of marriage, he had $182,000 in bank accounts.
He didn't have any grain in storage?
He had grain.
Well, isn't that an asset that's premarital if he has it before he's married?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Your Honor. However, what happened with respect to that is that it was commingled with the marital estate.
There isn't any marital estate to commingle. $18,000 in a truck and a 3 month salary during the summer? Separate those out?
Your Honor, I think the Stevens case just recently decided by this court said that earnings during the marriage by one spouse are marital. And I think that's what we have here. There were earnings during the marriage by both spouses, but that was commingled with what he had prior to the marriage. And all of that together, I think it's important to note that he received the $1.4 million of marital property, or $1.38 million.
No, but he's got almost a $700,000 debt that he has to pay immediately.
So, and then that equalizes what the marital estate was that was acquired during the marriage. He made it virtually impossible for the court, or very difficult for the court, to value the marital estate. He provided statements to the court that said the marital grain inventory was $573,750, $546,500. First day of trial, $69,259. Second day of trial, $440,099. We had 2 days of trial because he didn't produce the documents from the co-op and from ADM so that we could trace. Once we got those, his own expert had to do some backtracking and increase the marital grain from $69,000 to $440,000. With respect to the marital equipment that he had, or that was acquired during the marriage, he had two appraisals. He offered the first one, then when he found out we discovered more, then he offered the second one. He had never disclosed that in a property statement. Perhaps more troubling was Exhibit 43, where he sold grain in the summer of 2014, clearly marital grain, but he held on to the checks and deposited them in November and December. And that way the accountant, the first time around, was able to say, those were 2014 non-marital grains. He actively took steps to conceal the true value, leaving the court in a position where it had to determine credibility. It did determine credibility, and ultimately it made a decision that falls within the range of what is reasonable, and it's not an abuse of discretion. We would ask that you affirm the trial court's decision. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next.